record these lectures, and if you want, you can get them online. Look at the link. I'm not sure I'll bother to put lectures from both classes up or not, but without the blackboard, it's pretty hard to figure out, you know, what I was pointing on. You move this to this side of the equation. But it's free. If you want to review one of these lectures, you should be able to do it online. So the way I'll have this room set up for class is I'll typically write down kind of a summary of what we did on this board the previous lecture. And we usually start by talking about what we did. And for this particular lecture, I've also bothered to put down this kind of long to-do list of things that you want to do soon if you haven't already. Right, so signing up for Moodle, we're just going to be using Moodle for lab in this class. So it's going to be just a way that you have available to you all of your lab grades, and you can see what your average lab grade is. We've got the pretest and lab one. Those are two things that are online. So the lab one isn't formally due for a while. The pretest is maybe due soon. And signing up for WebAssign, it looked like most people had already signed up for WebAssign. And you should have your four cards for what we're going to do today. Everyone have any problems with those things?
I don't have the four
cards. Ah.
Will fingers do the trick? Like one?
Well, no. In short, it's good enough for when you forget, but do you have four cards or not? I can get you four cards. Unfortunately, for people who don't want to use them, I have basically an infinite supply of them, so I can always give you four more. Say again?
Thank goodness.
Can I also have one? You can have one. Here's three more.
Thanks.
So there are usually a stack of them up there. Okay, so all of the to-do list got done. So what did we talk about last time? I think probably, I hope a good fraction of this was all review to you. You can't have really have taken any science class and not have done the metric system. In fact, if you're from any country except this country, it's the only system you would have used. I do want you to be familiar with these basic multipliers, right? Giga, a billion, mega, a million, kilo, a thousand, etc. The one that's kind of non-standard, and we will be using it in lab a lot, is centimeter. So centa is basically only used for meter and to denote this distance that's about half an inch or so in size. Scientific notation, way of doing big numbers, small numbers, showing exactly how many sig figs you have. For stuff in this room, and stuff I think from WebAssign, you basically always want to be displaying three sig figs. And you don't want to be rounding before you come up with your final answer. If possible, you want to hold all of the digits in your calculator before you come up, before you finally round the answer to three sig figs. This dimensional checking, I think it's kind of hard to understand at this point. We're going to have lots of equations. Real equations, the units have to work out on. And it's going to be to your advantage to check every equation for the units. Now, since we're in this crazy country and use these crazy units, we have to learn how to do unit conversion. And the method of doing unit conversion is pretty straightforward. You multiply by one, where you write one in kind of a funny way. So 1 kilogram is exactly the same thing as 1,000 grams, and so 1 kilogram on top of 1,000 grams is one. But I've chosen that, I've put the grams on the denominator, so that when I do the units, the grams cancel out. A kilogram weighs 2.2 pounds, and I've put the kilograms in the denominator so it cancels that. So for cubic squared units, that is that unit cubed, so I need to get rid of three of them. So this conversion factor that a meter is 3.28 feet, I need to cube that when I make my conversion.
to memorize numbers?
No.
No.
I guess I would ask you to memorize how many seconds there are in an hour.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the only one.
I'm asking a lot.
I guess I also expect you to know how many centimeters there are in a meter. Oh.
But not like feet to meters.
No. So if I ask you, as part of a problem, if you had that, if I gave you a problem that was, say, in miles per hour and you had to convert it, I would tell you how many meters there are in a mile. And I probably will have such a problem on an exam, because you should know how to unit convert.
What about like constants? Like, I don't, maybe not for the first class periods, but like we have to memorize like the speed of light and stuff like that.
So I think the only constant you need to memorize, so if you look at in the course review, it has constants to know, and I'm pretty sure the only one there is G, 9.8 meters per second squared. There might be some other ones later on, I can't remember. But certainly for a good bit, that's the only one. More questions? Okay, so we spent most of our time on trig because that's where I'm thinking you're gonna have the most problem, and that's the thing that's gonna happen all the time in the course. We're gonna be having triangles, and we're gonna need to figure out legs and hypotenuse. So the upshot is that similar triangles have the same angle and therefore the same ratio of leg sizes, and we can tabulate what those ratios are and call them this function, say sine. So sine of theta is the opposite over the hypotenuse, cosine is the adjacent over the hypotenuse, tangent is the opposite over the adjacent. There are also those co-trigonometric functions, which are these things upside down. So the cotangent is the adjacent over the hypotenuse. But I usually don't have much use for those sorts of functions. In terms of the angles, there's a variety of kind of trickiness that comes from the inverse functions. Right? You remember that the sine, the inverse sine is never going to give you an angle that's more than 90 degrees. And the cosine, inverse cosine is never going to give you a negative angle. And as a result, it really is smart to draw the triangle you're talking about and show me what the angle is. If you on an exam just say theta is, 50 degrees, what I have to assume is that theta is being measured counterclockwise from the positive x-axis. Right? So it's to your advantage to draw me the triangle and show me the angle as opposed to making me use that standard result. So things we didn't talk about, there's some mathematics in Appendix A that's worth reviewing, and it gives you things like the circumference of circles, the area of circles, the area of a rectangle, etc. Those sorts of geometric properties are in that table, and I hesitate to say you should memorize that stuff, but you certainly should be familiar with that. So if you have, in an exam, if you're kind of missing a formula that you didn't put on your cheat sheet, you can ask me whether I think that's fair game or not. And some of these things should probably be on your cheat sheet. We haven't done yet any problems that require the quadratic equation, but we will. So I've put that up there as something else from Appendix A. Questions? Okay, so as you know, this chapter deals with position, velocity, and acceleration. And instead of starting with those quantities, I want to start with a more general case, because what's going on here really is pretty general, and it isn't specific to these particular position quantities. So let's imagine that you're doing a chemical reaction, and you're looking at the number of moles that are being produced as a function of time. Right, so for a typical sort of chemical reaction, as the reactants are used up, the rate of the reaction is going to slow. So, I don't know, typically this thing might look kind of like that. And we might call the rate of the reaction to be the rate at which the products are being produced. That is to say, the change in the number of moles of the product divided by the change in time. So first of all, some notation. This symbol, which is a capital delta, that means change in. So if I'm talking about two times, say this time, which I'll call the initial time, and this time, which I'll call the final time, the change in the number of moles is that quantity. And if I take the change in the number of moles that are produced and I divide it by the change in time, what I'm getting, rise over run, is the slope of the line that goes through those two points. So this thing, a line like this that goes through a curve twice, it's called a secant line. And what I've actually described is the average rate of the reaction. Now, the reaction is going slower and slower and slower, and you can kind of see that if I were to choose points that were closer and closer together, if I got really close together, I would approximate a line like that, which would be just kissing the curve. So this is called the tangent curve. And the slope of the tangent curve, that's what I'm going to mean by the instantaneous rate of the reaction. Okay, so when we're talking about rates, we're talking about changes of things in time. We can talk about averages where we have finite differences, but if we make those differences very, very small, then we're going to approximate the instantaneous rate. So mathematicians would write this instantaneous rate as the limit of two points that are very close together . But practically speaking, you couldn't do that, right? You couldn't find the number of moles of product now and the number of moles of product a microsecond later. You just couldn't measure that very small difference. So practically speaking, you're always going to be measuring instantaneous results as being some just smallish value for change in time. If you look at a small enough piece of a curve, if we were to blow up any small piece of this curve, eventually it would start to look like a straight line, and the slope of a straight line is constant, so it wouldn't matter which two points we're choosing. Okay, so those of you who have taken some calculus, I'm sure, recognize that this thing is basically the derivative. So if we had some function of time, you might have denoted the derivative with a prime. What we actually prefer is these little d's. And the reason we prefer them is we're thinking that this little d is very similar to that delta, except it's infinitesimal as opposed to being finite. So this course doesn't have calculus in it, but for those of you who are used to calculus, realize that the slope is the same thing as the derivative. Okay, so if I were to try and graph out the rate of this reaction, as a function of time, you can see that starts out with a big slope, but as time goes on, the slope gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So the rate of the reaction might look kind of like that. So let's ask kind of the reverse question. How many moles of product are produced between two times? Right, so let me call this little time interval delta t. And we can, of course, get that by taking the delta t up top. And if we take the rate of reaction, which is, of course, just the coordinate that we're talking about, and we multiply it by delta t, that's going to give us the little bit of moles that were produced during that interval. And geometrically, what that means, if we multiply a height times a width, what we're getting is the area of that rectangle. If we add up the area on the next rectangle, we'd get, this would tell us how much had changed between this time, and this would tell us how much had changed in that time. If we add them up, we're going to get the total amount of change during that interval. So if we do this lots of times, what you realize, and particularly start making this delta t small, you realize that the area under the curve is equal to the change in the number of moles that's occurring during that interval. And again, those of you who have done calculus recognize that the area under the curve is called the integral, and it's usually denoted by this letter that is supposed to remind you of an S. Okay, so in general, we go to the rate by looking at the slope, and we can go back to the original graph by looking at the area. Okay, so this is all very general. It has nothing to do with particular positions. It applies to any old quantity you're interested in. But in this chapter, we're interested in the position. So if we're thinking about, say, this car, we can record its position as a function of time using these axes to give us those various positions. We can talk about the average velocity then as being the change in position divided by the change in time. And we can make an exactly analogous plot. So here's position, here's time, here's this car that's gone forward. We can figure out the average velocity between two times by taking this change in position and dividing it by this change in time, and call that the average velocity. Now, if we bring these two times very close together, we will approximate the slope of a tangent line. And that's what we mean by the instantaneous velocity. Okay, so let me kind of redraw this a little bit. So let's say that that's what the position looks like as a function of time. So this is a car that started at zero, went to some big extent, and is starting to move backwards by this interval here. If I draw below that the velocity, the slope of these lines, so the slope starts with some big positive number, it gets smaller, reaches zero, I guess it's more like there, and then it goes negative. So that velocity versus time is going to kind of look like that. Hmm?
Hey, what does this say by instantaneous velocity?
Slope. Okay. So it's the slope of the tangent line. And of course, what that is, it's exactly the same limit for two points very close together, the change in position divided by the change in time. Right, that's how your meter works on your car. It measures how many times the wheels have turned, as it were, what change in position has occurred during a particular change in time. Okay, and we can do the reverse by looking at the area under this curve. We can get the position. Now, we've defined the average velocity and the instantaneous velocity. I just want to tell you that this concept of average velocity, we're not going to much care about it in the future. We're only defining average velocity as a stepping stone to get to instantaneous velocity. And once we get through chapter 2, basically all the velocities we'll be talking about will be instantaneous velocities. We also have this difference between speed and velocity. So when we're talking about speed, all we're meaning is the absolute value of the velocity. Right? So if this were in fact a car and it went forward and it backed up, most speedometers don't work backing up. They can't read negative velocities or positive velocities when you're going in reverse. But if you're backing up, if you're moving to smaller values of x, we'll call those negative velocities, and the speed will just be the absolute value of that velocity. And sometime, I'm not sure I'll always be careful to make that distinction, but that's the technical distinction between velocity and speed. Speed is always positive, and velocity can be positive or negative depending upon whether x is increasing or decreasing. Okay, so acceleration, of course, it's going to work the same way, right? We're going to have the average acceleration. That's going to be the change in velocity divided by the change in time. Right? So I can pick two times, and I can look at the change in the velocity. In this case, the change is negative. So when I calculate the average acceleration, the change in velocity divided by the change in time, for this particular case, it's going to be negative. In general, if we want the instantaneous acceleration, we want the slope of the velocity versus time curve. Right? So this is what the average acceleration is. The instantaneous acceleration, that's the slope. So I could make a graph then of acceleration versus time. And in this particular case, it looks like the slope of this line is pretty constant. So looks like the acceleration is some negative number. Okay, so to go from velocity to acceleration, we're talking slope, and we can do the reverse, right? The area under acceleration versus time is going to be the velocity that we have. Okay. Well, with that, let's take a look at, get out your cards, let's take a look at some of these kind of conceptual problems. So here's the story. Starting from rest, a car accelerates down a straight road. Short time later, the driver applies the brakes and the car comes to a stop. Which of these graphs describes that situation? So these are graphs of position versus time. Okay. I see half of nothing. Cardless people are thinkers. So we have a car, starts at rest, goes for a while, and stops. Which one of these graphs of position versus time describes that situation? So I see majority A's, but with some B's. Is that a? That's an A. I like it. It's good. So what both A and B have in common is the final position is down the road. Right? Whereas these two guys have the final position being the initial position. It started at the origin and it ended at the origin. So those guys are out. What it says is that it started from rest. And you remember that the velocity is the slope of this curve, and the slope of B starts out as non-zero. So it can't be B, right? You have to start from rest, so you have to have no slope to begin with. We build up to some velocity, then we apply the brakes, and we end up with zero velocity. So it's got to be A. Okay, so in this case here, somebody throws a ball straight up, it comes straight down. That's the motion we're talking about. Which one of these curves describes how the velocity changes this time with time? So throw the ball up, comes down. What does the curve of velocity versus time look like? I see C's and B's and A's. I see everything. So some of them are right and some of them are wrong. So A kind of speaks the truth, doesn't it? Because it looks kind of like it goes up and it comes down. But it isn't the right answer. What would motion that matches A look like? All right, so we start out going fast, we stop, and then we start going fast again. We never reversed. Right? So if we're going to go and come back, that coming back has to have a negative velocity associated with it. Okay, so D has a negative velocity associated with it. Is that the right answer? Well, remember that when I threw this thing up, the initial velocity wasn't zero. And when it comes back down, the velocity certainly isn't zero. So this thing has the velocity being zero at the beginning and the end. That can't be correct. So these guys, B and C, that show a big initial velocity and a big backwards velocity at the end, one of those has to be the correct answer. What's the difference between these two guys? This one has a constant slope, this one has a constant acceleration, and this one doesn't. And turns out, there's no reason for you to know this yet, turns out that motion under the force of gravity has a constant acceleration, so that C is the right answer. Right? But B, you shouldn't be upset if you have B as your result. So I think this was a question on the pretest, but it won't hurt to do it again. So here are four candidate curves, and here's the motion that we're talking about. The car starts at rest, goes forward for a while, the driver applies the brakes, realizes he forgot something, and he comes back to the initial position. Which one of these curves does that? These are, so the X indicates these are position versus time plots. Yes. Actually, I could move this closer, couldn't I? That would solve the problems. A, B, C, or D, there and back. Pretty much unanimous for D. I see some A's. What would the motion for A look like? So for A, we start at rest because there's no slope initially. We go to some positive position, we're at rest. We go back through x equals zero to negative values. We stop and then we come back. Okay? Maybe? So what's the difference between B and D? Well, B doesn't start from rest, right? It's pretty close to D. It's not a terrible answer. This is where somehow or other the thing is immediately going at 55 miles an hour. It comes to an immediate stop, and it goes backwards immediately at 55 miles an hour. Hard to do in a car. Okay, so this is a similar but different sort of question. What we have here is a graph. And I haven't told you what this is because it might be a position versus time graph, it might be a velocity versus time graph, it might be an acceleration versus time graph. And all I'm caring about is whether the quantity is positive, zero, or negative. So let's start with this being position versus time. If this is the point, is x positive, negative, or zero? Yeah, you can just read it, right? The fact that this is the x distance that it is, and that's some positive number. What's the velocity?
Negative.
We're not using our cards, so I can't find the quiet people who are wrong. Huh? What's the acceleration? I've heard everything, right? So this is hard to tell, right? So first of all, let me give you kind of a general rule, which I hope is easy to remember. It's called the smile theorem. If the position versus time looks kind of like this, then the acceleration is positive. If the acceleration is negative, then it looks kind of like that. So why is this the case? Well, here the velocity is zero and it's growing, right? So that's positive acceleration. Here the velocity was positive and it stopped. So that's negative acceleration. So sometimes you hear this word deacceleration. All that means is that the acceleration is negative. Okay, so trickier problems. How about if this is a graph of velocity versus time? Is the position positive, negative, or zero at P? Positive, yeah. Even the tricky ones aren't getting you. So throughout, from time equals zero to time P, it's always been moving forward, right? It's always had a positive velocity. So if you've always been moving forward, clearly you're at a positive x value. What's the velocity at point P? And what's the acceleration at point P? Yeah, it's negative, right? Because now we're talking about velocity versus time. The acceleration is the slope of that curve. And the slope, I hope you can see at P, is negative.
So would the acceleration be like the secondary derivative of the original?
So if we're talking calculus, and it won't hurt to do that, we've said that the velocity is the derivative of position, and the acceleration is the derivative of velocity, and so it has to be the second derivative of position, right? Which none of that's on any exam, right? Questions? Okay, so here's a graph of position versus time. Where is the velocity the biggest? We're not using our cards, but I can live with it. C, yep, the slope is the biggest at C. So here's a graph of velocity versus time. Where is the position the biggest? This is velocity versus time. Where is the position the biggest? Yeah, vast majority with the right answer, but not everyone. So let's think about it. So the car starts out with some velocity and it gets faster and faster and faster, and finally it comes to a stop and then at C, and then it's coming backwards. And you can see that the furthest position occurs when it stopped, right? Because beyond then it's losing position, it's going backwards. So people with calculus will tell you that you maximize the function by setting the derivative equal to zero. So velocity is the derivative of the position function, so having the position function have zero derivative at C tells you it's the maximum of it. Where is the acceleration the biggest? Yeah, so the acceleration is the slope, right? So at B, the velocity would be pretty fast, but the slope would be zero. So there'd be zero acceleration at B. The biggest slope is occurring at A. Okay, so those are, sometimes these sorts of questions are called conceptual questions. They're not similar to the questions that are in the book. So let's take a look at some of the book sort of questions. Incidentally, if you look at my exams, My exams typically have a mix of both sorts of questions. So these are more numerical questions, and I have in mind to look at 6, 17, 23, and 15. And it's basically impossible to read this, but for the people who are up close, is that focused? So what we've got here is a graph of position versus time, and it's asking us to calculate what the average velocity is during the interval from 0 to 2 and from 0 to 4, all of these various spots. And I think what's helpful to do is to make a table where we can read that graph. So we've got time and we've got position. So at time equals 0, the position is 0. Here at time equals 2, looks to me like the position is 10. And we know that the average velocity is the change in position divided by the change in time. So the change in position would be 10 minus 0. The change in time would be 2 minus 0. So this would be 10 halves or 5 meters per second. So how about 0 to 4? Well, at 4, it looks to me like this thing is at 5. So if we do the same process, the final position is 5, the initial position is 0, the final time is 4, the initial time is 0. So what we have is 5/4, or 1.25 meters per second. How about from 4 to 7? So at 7, I read minus 5 as the position. So do the same process. Take the position at 7, which is minus 5, subtract the position at 4, which is 5, and divide by the interval, which is 3. So minus minus 5 is minus 10. Minus 3 1/3 meters a second. So you tell me, what's the average velocity from 0 to 8 seconds?
Zero,
right? The position didn't change. Started at 0, ended at 0, divide that by 8, we still get 0. Okay, so 17 asks same sorts of questions, but it's asking about the instantaneous velocity. So the instantaneous velocity is the slope of the tangent line, and in general that's hard to calculate, but if something is a straight line, then every piece of it has the same slope. So we could calculate the slope any place we wanted to. So what is the instantaneous velocity at 1 second? It's the same for it is what for any time like this, right? So it's the same as what it was there, 5. Did you say 2.5? Right? So for a straight line, the slope is a constant. The average velocity is the same as the instantaneous velocity. And since this is made out of line segments, we can pretty much just find the slope of those segments. So what is the average, or excuse me, the instantaneous velocity at time equals 3 seconds?
-2.5.
And so we can see it's moving backwards, so it better be negative. And we can choose any points we want because it's a straight line. So we can have our final position of 5, our initial position of 10, So we have a change in position that is minus 5 divided by 2. So we've got minus 2.5 meters a second. Is that okay? What's the instantaneous velocity at 4.5 seconds? Zero, right? Because it's a flat line. And at 7.5 seconds, five, yeah, because it's going 5 units in 1 second. Okay. 23. I think that's next on the list. So this kind of, yep.
Just from that previous question, so if we were asked to find how far it traveled, would we just drive throughout the area under?
So the distance it's traveled would be the area under the velocity versus time curve. And this is the position versus time. So what would the velocity versus time curve look like for, I don't know, for this one? We can't do it very precisely, but we've said that it's 5 for the first 3, for the first 2 seconds. And then it goes negative 2.5, is that what we said? For 2 seconds, and then it's 0. But in any case, yes, if we looked at the area under that curve, we would get the, we could look at the displacement. Incidentally, this question, how far did it go, is always a little bit of a tricky question. Because if this thing were a car and it went this thing, so it went forward 10 and then it went backwards, we'd still count that backwards distance as distance it traveled. And so there's always a little bit of ambiguity in that. So to avoid that ambiguity, usually we use the word displacement to describe just the difference in position, as opposed to how far the wheels turned. More questions? Okay, so this 23 is a question to remind you about unit conversion. Because, I mean, in real life, what we would have is speeds that are in miles per hour, and often it's going to be convenient to be using meters a second. So we're going to have to get some unit conversion in here, but besides that, what's going on? Well, we know that the acceleration is the change in the velocity divided by the time. And we know that this change in velocity, right, is from 60 to 55, so it's 5 miles per hour. And we know what the acceleration is. It's 0.6 meters per second squared. So if we just rearrange this equation, we have the time it takes is the change in velocity divided by the acceleration. So we've got then the 5 miles per hour divided by the 0.6 meter per second squared. And that's the right answer, but it's in crazy units, so we're going to have to do some unit conversion. So we've got 5 miles per hour, and I happen to know, because I just worked this problem, what the conversion factor is. I wouldn't expect you to know it, so there are 1,609 meters in a mile, but I would expect you to know that in 1 hour, there are 60 minutes. If you're in doubt, you probably have a cheat sheet that you're carrying with you now. And in 1 minute, there are 60 seconds. So it's going to be 5 times 1609 divided by 60 squared, which is 360. No. I must have hit the wrong number. Some huge number came up. I must have hit multiply instead of divide. 2.23 meters per second. Once I've got that, Now let's take a second to think about units now. So what we have are meters per second divided by meters per second squared. So the meters cancel out and one of the seconds cancel out. And we have 1/1/seconds. And that is, in fact, seconds, which is what we wanted for our answer. And what I get is 3.72 seconds. Okay. Let's take a look at 15. So 15 says, can't read the number there, but in order to qualify for this race, the car has to average 250 kilometers per hour. For the first half, it's only gone 230 kilometers an hour. So for the second half of the race, how fast does the car have to go? And at least for me, I find it helpful to draw me pictures of the situation. So here's the full race, the full 1,600 meters. And for this whole race, I have to average 250 kilometers an hour. For the first 800 meters, I haven't done it. I've only gone 230 kilometers an hour. And the question is, how fast do I need to go on this last leg in order to succeed? Well, I think a good stopping place is to figure out, you know, what does the clock have to read if I'm going to succeed at the end? How much time do I have totally to make all 1,600 meters? And then I can subtract the time it took to do the first bit, and then I know how I know the distance I need to go and the time I need to do it in order to get the last bit. Does that make sense? So I've got the old problem, though, of units. I could probably stick with the hours, because in some sense it isn't going to matter. Yeah, let's do that. I'm very tempted to convert it to meters a second, but we're going to get very small fractions of an hour. So the time, we know we can calculate, because in general, the velocity is the change in position divided by the change in time. So the time is going to be the change in position divided by the velocity. So here, I need to go 1,600 meters at 250 kilometers per hour. Now, I have to do some unit conversion because I've got kilometers there and I've got meters there. And of course, what we know is that in 1 kilometer, there are 1,000 meters. So what I've got then is 1.6 kilometers, and underneath it, I've got the 250 kilometers per hour. And it's not going to take very long to do that, basically mile distance. So I got 1.6 kilometers at 250. Some very small number. Well, I have my calculator set to only give me one digit, so I can't even see how small it is. Yeah, so this is 6.4 times 10 to the minus 3 hours. And the time I've already used up, I went 0.8 kilometers at 230 kilometers per hour. So that's 0.8 230. That is 3.4, basically 8 times 10 to the minus 3 hours. And the last class we did this in seconds, and I like that better than having these real funny numbers. So I got 3.5 times 10 to the minus 3 hours. So the difference between those two is the time I have available to do that little section. I'm keeping all the significant digits in my calculator. So this is 2.92 times 10 to the minus 3 hours. So the velocity here is the distance I need to travel, which is 0.8 kilometers, divided by that 2.92 times 10 to the minus 3 hours. And I get 273.8 kilometers per hour, or 274 if I wanted to have 3 sig figs. Okay. Now in the last class, somebody said, that kind of doesn't make sense. You should just have to average, right? So if you're 20 kilometers per hour slow in the first half, you just have to go 20 kilometers faster in the second half. And it's close, right? That would give us 270, but we needed to go even a little bit faster than that. So let's take a look at the same problem, but with easier numbers. So let's say we go 10 meters a second for 100 meters, and then we go another 100 meters at 20 meters a second. What's our average speed? Is it 15? Well, so 100 meters a second to go 100 meters, it's going to take 10 seconds, right? At 20 meters a second, it's going to take 5 seconds. So overall, we went 200 meters in 15 seconds. And if you crank that out on your calculator, it's not 15. It's 13.33. Yep?
How did you get the average speed?
So average speed is always the distance divided by the time. So I went 200 meters, and I did it in 15 seconds. So let's take a look at a different way of seeming, maybe it sounds like the same sort of problem, but let me say I go 10 meters a second for 10 seconds. And then I go 20 meters a second for 10 seconds. And so before we went equal distances at different velocities, now we're going equal times with different velocities. So in this case here, I went 100 meters, right? 10 meters a second for 10 seconds. In this case here, I went 200 meters, right? 10 seconds at 20 meters a second. So the total distance I went was 300 meters in 20 seconds, and that is 15 meters a second. Okay, so it's easy to make mathematical problems which seem like you just average the numbers out, but depending upon exactly how the problem is phrased, it'll work or not work. It kind of depends whether the numbers are in the numerator or the denominator. So don't be confused about that. Questions? So next class period, we're going to be really concerned with a special case. And we can get at that special case today. It's the case of constant acceleration. So what I'd like to do is to get the graphs of position versus time and velocity versus time in the case where the acceleration versus time is some constant number. So if the acceleration is a constant, that means that the slope of velocity versus time has to be a constant, right? Which means it has to be a line. And I'm not sure how you memorize the formula for a line. At least in high school for me, it was mx plus b, where m was the slope and b was the y-intercept. What we're going to be doing in lab all the time is this is going to be the b times x plus a. Kind of doesn't matter what we call these things. But for us, the y-intercept, the initial velocity, I'm going to call that v naught. And we know that the slope, it has to be the acceleration, a. So v has to be the slope, a, times x, which is time in this case, plus the initial velocity. What's the distance, right? So if we pick some time, how far is the particle at that time? Well, it's the area, right? So I need to calculate the area of that trapezoid. Well, I don't know, it's not on this list of formulas, but the area of a trapezoid is kind of similar to the area of a rectangle, except we have two different heights. And all you need to do is to average those two heights. So the area of this rectangle is the base, which is the time t, times the average of this height, which is v naught. This other height is going to be v naught plus at. And that has to equal how far the particle has gone minus its initial position. So if we work this out, there are two v's here. So this is t times 2v naught plus at, all divided by 2. And those 2's cancel out. So this is v naught t plus 1 half a. And there are two t's there, so it's squared. So we've got two of kind of four very important formulas that we'll be dealing with a whole lot on the quiz on Friday and tomorrow. Namely, the position is the initial position plus the initial velocity plus 1 half the acceleration times time squared. And the velocity is equal to the initial velocity times the acceleration. There's one other formula that's kind of worth remembering at this point because it has to do with those averages. So there are kind of two ways you could think about finding the average velocity. And you should be worried whether they're the same.
Mm-hmm. Are those for on which of those graphs? Or does it not matter?
So this thing here is a graph of position versus time.
Okay.
So, and what it says is that it's some quadratic. So it should look kind of like that.
Okay.
And we calculated that by looking at the area under the velocity versus time curve. So one other comment here, derivations like this are not going to be part of your exam. So I don't want you to blow them off because they're important to me, but they're not going to be part of your exam. So this is just proving something that you're then going to use a lot of. So what I was saying is that another important equation that we can get has to do with averaging. So we could calculate the average velocity by taking the distance something has gone and dividing it by the time. Right? So the average velocity would be the distance it's gone divided by the time. On the other hand, we might also think about calculating the average velocity by taking half the initial velocity and the final velocity. And you should be wary of those sorts of things, right? Because we've seen that sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not. Well, in this case, it's true. You can calculate the average velocity either way and you'll get exactly the same number in the case of constant acceleration. So let's do one kind of quasi-numerical problem. So let's try, so here's a plot of what the velocity is as a function of time. And let's think about, you know, trying to actually graph what the position versus time would be if this is the velocity versus time. And this is a pretty simple problem because the velocity is all constant, right? So here the velocity is constant at 30 centimeters per second, here it's constant at 0 centimeters per second, and here it's constant at minus 20 centimeters a second. So again, in terms of trying to figure out what this motion looks like, somehow or other this thing started immediately going 30 meters a second and it came to a dead stop, and it sits there for 1 second, and then it immediately goes 20 centimeters per second backwards. And we're supposed to figure out what the position looks like at different times. So for the segments where the velocity is constant, the average velocity and the instantaneous velocity are all 30 for this piece, we can figure out what the position is going to be by just taking the velocity times the time. So if the object started at position 0, it's going to move along at a given rate with a given slope, and at the end of 1 second, it's going to have reached a position of 30 centimeters, right? Because it's going 30 centimeters per second. For the next second, its position isn't going to change because it has zero velocity. It's sitting still. For the next segment, for the next 3 seconds, it's going to move backwards at 20 centimeters per second. So it's going to go a distance during that time that's going to be minus 20 times 3, or minus 60 centimeters. So at the end of, so this was 2, 3, 4, and 5. At the end of 5 centimeters, it's going to be back 60 centimeters, having started at 30. So its position versus time has to look kind of like that. Okay, so instantaneous and average velocity for this segment is 30. Instantaneous and average velocity for that segment is 0. Instantaneous and average velocity for this segment is minus 20. Now, you can see kind of the problem with this problem, and that is to say, it's just not at all physically possible, right? You can't suddenly go 30 centimeters per second. There has to be times of acceleration and deacceleration. And that's really why these new formulas are so useful to us, is that they will represent much more physically reasonable cases where the velocity changes continuously over time, as opposed to suddenly having a particular velocity. Okay, questions? Well, let's call it quits.